Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules. Rule number one, no touching of the hair or face.
Of course. Go.
And that's it. Go. Now, let's do this.
Nothing can stop me. I'm all the way up.
Dynamite drop in money. That broadcast school has really paid off.
And what's up, everybody? Happy New Year. Happy 2018. This is Destruction 101 Podcast, episode 43. I am your host, Dave Sturcio, and I want to be the first to wish you, obviously, a Happy New Year. I hope everybody enjoyed their festivities on New Year's Eve. I know we last spoke, it was the week before, so I was wishing everybody a Happy New Year. We went over some resolutions. Well, you know, if you want to catch up on all my episodes of this podcast, you can definitely check it out. B Plus Player Radio Network, the Shining Wizards Radio Network. You can check it out on iTunes. You can check it out on SoundCloud. I'm all over the place. Can't get rid of me. So you can definitely do that. Rate, review, and subscribe, and share. I know my Facebook podcast page has grown significantly, and I haven't pumped any money into it yet. So this is pretty cool. I'm very happy about it, very humbled. Very excited about 2018. I have a lot of shit to go on and to do and to accomplish. And I promise to myself and to my loved ones that I am going to be the hardest working motherfucker in the world this year. And I'm not here to make enemies, and I'm not here to piss anybody off. So if you don't like either A, the sound of my voice, B, my content, then this is not the podcast for you, which I'm totally cool with. But thank you so much if you are listening for the very first time. My podcast page did grow over the winter break. You know, it's been growing. I'm chasing down 1,000 followers on Twitter. I know, listen, I know it's not a lot from, you know, for everybody else, but I do see some independent, quote, stars out there with like fucking 200 followers. So I'm like, all right, I'm doing better than them. The Facebook, you can follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/Dave Sturcio. That's right. I've changed all my handles over to my name because that's who I am. All right. The Dave Destruction thing was a pro wrestling persona and a character that sort of kind of got over. And it's still in my personality to be a very destructive person and to be a, you know, an inspiration to some to chase the dream, because I will get all into that tonight. As like I said, this could be the first time you're listening to the sound of my voice. If you want to catch up on all my other episodes, they are on the archives of the two networks that I'm on, and also on iTunes. And all the links will be posted within this episode. So basically, what I'm going to do this episode is, obviously, I did ask for some questions, and there are some topics that I want to touch on. But before that, and before we get to our first break, which is going to be, obviously, you know, just a song, no sponsors or anything like that. But what I want to do is kind of reintroduce myself, because look, this could be the first time you're ever hearing the sound of my voice, and you're going to be like, why does this guy have a podcast? Why does this guy have a crazy social media following or trying to get there? You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Dave Sturcio, Sturcio. You can follow me there. Follow me on all my social medias. Why am I doing this? Where did this all come from? How did this all come about? Well, it all started with a boy in a dream. So, no. What happens is, this is basically how I got started. And I like to do this to, A, because it's a venting session. It's a journal. It's to kind of give you an idea of where I've been and what I've done and why the fuck does this guy have a podcast and why am I going to listen to the sound of his voice? So, basically, it all started on September 10th, 1985, Dave Sturcio was born. But look, I've always grown up a very passionate kid. I've grown up an athlete. I've played a lot of sports in my day. I've always been a competitive person. But my first love, other than the Dallas Cowboys, because of my father. I don't like the people that are like, well, he's from Jersey, why is he like the Cowboys? Well, because my dad in 1961 decided to go against the grain and not root for the fucking Giants, okay? And he said, oh, here's a team that just came out a couple years ago, why do I latch on to them? They become America's team, and they become the biggest you know, like highest grossing sports franchise in the history of sports. So my dad did the right thing, and I had a very, very good childhood when it comes to being a Cowboys fan. Won a couple Super Bowls, and ever since then, they've been total shit. But anyway, I've always been a passionate person. I've always loved professional sports. I am a diehard Dallas Cowboy fan, as I just said, a diehard New York Yankees fan. My father, however, is a Mets fan, so go figure that one out. That all started because my mom took me to a couple Yankee games via her free tickets from her her dentist she worked for at the time. And, you know, I got to go to the games in 1992, 93, latched on to Bernie Williams really early as one of my favorite players. And then this guy named Derek Jeter came around in 1995, and he played a couple games here and there. And I thought, this guy's cool. He's got a cool look to him. He's a cool dude. He's an athlete. He's going to be a star. Boom, I'm a huge Yankees fan. And again, great childhood, 96, 98, 99, 2000, and even recently as of 2009, which isn't so fucking recent anymore. So being that they have the offseason they're having right now, maybe it's 2018 is their next championship run. Huge New York Rangers fan. That all started because I used to watch the games in 1993 with my buddy Jimmy down in his basement with all his family. Huge Ranger fan. The whole family was a huge like Rangers family. So I latched onto them early. Again, had a great 1994. I was 9 years old and I got to watch the Cup, and it was something special. But then again, that's it. I haven't had anything since. Basketball, I grew up a New York Knicks fan. Despite if you do know me and my recent accomplishments with the Brooklyn Nets, they were about to hire a Knicks fan because I've been a Knicks fan my entire life. Started watching them in around, I want to say 94, obviously a very cool year for New York sports with the Knicks and the Rangers. I used to call my buddy Mark Rogers on the phone every Knicks game. Every Knicks game. So my dad, I mean, this is before you had to put a fucking area code in. So you can actually, we just talked the entire Knicks game. I was a huge fan of John Starks, a bigger fan of Anthony Mason. He was my first jersey I ever bought as far as a Knicks jersey. A lot of guys, a lot of stars on that team. Hubert Davis, you know, obviously Patrick Ewing. You know, it was a great team. Charles Oakley, a lot of grit on that team. So ever since then, huge Knicks fan. But once again, I've never seen the Knicks win a championship. So I know they have their championships back in the day, which seems to be shit a little longer than what we expect. But I'm a huge, huge sports fan. This is what this podcast is somewhat about. If you're a sports fan, you're going to like my opinions. You're going to disagree with my opinions, and that's where good content comes from. Another thing I fell in love with when I was around, seven years old, 1992, flipping through the channel. You're going to have to excuse my sniffles today because I think I'm getting the flu, a matter of fact. But anyway, so I'm flipping around the channels on a Saturday morning or Sunday morning. I believe it was Sunday. Stop on the USA Network, and there's a thing called WWF Superstars. Now, I had no idea that it was WWF Superstars because all I saw was a barbershop. I had no idea. I saw this makeshift barbershop with this guy with some sliced up pants, and he's interviewing the team called the Rockers. And I, again, no idea what I'm watching, what is going to happen here. But it had me. It kind of hooked me in, and I said, and I looked at my brother, who's five at the time, and he's, you know, I have an elephant's brain. I remember everything from my childhood, but I can't remember what I had for fucking lunch. We'll get into that later. But me and my brother, and I said, Danny, you know, we could be the Rockers. You know, that I want to be the blonde, who's Shawn Michaels, and you could be Marty Jannetty. And at the time, my brother had like blondish hair, so it didn't make any sense. You know, he should have been Shawn. And I think down the line, he became Shawn, and I was Marty as far as love and affection from my parents. They loved him more than life itself. No, I mean, that's another story for another day. But Danny and me, I was like, we should be the Rockers. And then bang, before I knew it, boom, sweet chin music, throw the guy through a plate glass window, and I'm hooked. And I'm like, that was the coolest thing I've ever seen. A seven-year-old watching that kind of violence, unfiltered, you know, dad and mom, they didn't see it. So over the course of the next couple of years, you have the debut of Monday Night Raw, and I had to earn these things. My mother, you know, I come from a parents that divorced when I was 8 years old. So my brother was only six and a half. So it was very, very hard for us because we didn't know. And, you know, you think of the stepbrother scene where it's like, you know, it's like, is it our fault? Did we do something bad? And then, you know, the dad's like, it's 150% your fault. I don't know why they divorced. My mom is a fucking angel, but she's out there. I mean, she's a character in herself. She was a cheerleading coach when my dad coached us playing football. So, like, we were always involved with the community stuff and the intramural sports and the Pop Warner shit. And she's great. She's great. But, again, a divorce happens. I went with my mom at first when I was first, you know, when it first all happened. And then as I got older, I realized, okay, I think the better play here is to get with dad, okay, for success reasons, for just better parenting reasons. And it, like, I'm not trying to knock my mom. I'm just saying that's it was the better play. So in middle school, I got to live with my dad, and it was a different world. I mean, we were being obviously taken care of a little better, you know, newer clothes, new this, new that. My father, and this continues to this day today in 2018, he's the most selfless man on the planet. He's done so much for me and my brother, and there is not a damn thing I can do in this world for him that would make up for everything that he's done for us. Like, some people get raised and they're like, oh, you know, I came up bad, or I came up with a broken home, or this, that, and the other. I came up with my dad, and I couldn't thank him more for everything he's done for me, because as the story goes, you know, I go to high school. I went through some rough times in high school, because in middle school I discovered what Elio's Pizza was, and McDonald's still had the supersize menu. So I became a fat kid, and very fast. There was no working out back then. Like, and if there was, I didn't know anything about it. The only thing I knew was how to play sports. And then, like, I went from being a shortstop to a pitcher and a fucking first baseman. Do the math. I lost a step. You know, I went from being a running back and a receiver to an offensive lineman, if you catch my drift. So as I get through middle school, I get a little heavier, and I get to high school, and it's a whole other dynamic where people just pick on you just to pick on you. So I want to say that I was bullied for literally 3 of the 4 years of my high school reign. Okay, there was a lot of varsity players out there that would just bully me and just make me feel like the littlest piece of shit to ever grace the school grounds, and it was tough. It was tough for me because I did have friends in middle school. I was one of the most popular kids in grammar school. But when you get to high school, if you're not lettering in a sport and you're not latching on to the clique or the groups that are in, you know, it's very hard to make friends. So I did have a core group of friends from middle school that carried on to high school. But obviously, you know the deal. You go to high school and you separate. You're not going to have all the same classes. You're not going to be with all your friends and all this other shit. So it was difficult for me. So I was picked on. And then, you know, senior year comes around and you're now on top. You're the top dog of the school. And I latched on with the cool kids, and things were easier. I wasn't a bully. I didn't turn into a bully. In fact, I was more protective than ever, because when I was a senior, my brother was a freshman. So I had that, you know, that big brother mentality. And let me tell you something, going forward, like from then on, like from back then, me and my brother were really close when I was in grammar school. But when middle school and high school hit, we separated. He went his way. He was Mr. Skater Boy with his friends and his little cliques and liked rock music. And I was Mr. I love Wu-Tang and fucking hip hop. And it was just weird. Like, the dynamic was weird. We didn't get along. I mean, we got along. We're brothers. We love each other. But it was different. We were two completely different people when I was growing up in high school. So what happens after high school? What does the normal person do? Well, I wasn't a good test taker. If you guys know what the SATs are, I know some of you might be listening and know this, and some of you might look at it like, what the fuck are the SATs, because you're a millennial and you're younger. But the SATs, which probably still do exist, had a different scoring system at the time. 1600 was a perfect score, and you had to be the fucking, you know, whatever guy of the class to nail that. And nobody did. You know what I mean? Like, it was just one of those things. But if you scored I had a friend score a 1520 or some shit, and he went to fucking Harvard. And I was like, shit. You know what I mean? Like, that's big. What do I want to do? I want to go to Kane. I want to go to Rutgers. I want to go to a school that's close to home that I can do all the shit and get my education and succeed in the field of choice. What did I get in the SATs? I got an 880. Okay. I am the worst test taker of all time. There's no better test. There was no strategy. I got an 880 the first time, and then you can take it again as per the rules of the SATs. You can take it all over again and do better and study hard and this and that. I got an 840 the second time around. So clearly the SATs weren't for me. And in my head, I'm like, shit, is college not going to be for me because I can't get to one of the schools that I want to go to? So what do I have to do? I have to decide, what do I want to major in? and where do I want to go, which community college I have to go to. And that's just the way it is. You couldn't get into a school with a shit score like that. It just wasn't happening. And my athletics stopped sophomore year for my own reasons, because I'm a bitch. I was a bitch back then. I didn't believe in myself. I didn't have any confidence. It was bad. So that stopped. But I played, and like I said, very competitive, very passionate, but it just wasn't for me. I wasn't getting along with the coaches. I digress. Totally different ballgame. But anyway, so what am I going to do? Well, here's what I decided to do. I loved to write. My sophomore year of high school, I wrote a book. And no bullshit. I wrote a book in sophomore year of high school. It was themed and written after all my friends, and it was like a murder mystery novel, right? It was like 300 handwritten pages. I hand wrote that bitch. You know what I mean? Like, this is before the age of computers, okay? And I'm not dating myself. There was computers, but it wasn't like I had my own fucking laptop, or I'm on a MacBook right now, or I can type it in my notes on my iPhone. There was no such thing. In fact, I didn't get my first phone until I was like 17, so to keep that in mind. But anyway, so I said, you know what? Journalism is the way to go. I love sports. Let me go for sports journalism. Now, because of my low score on my SATs, you had to take placement tests for college, and I bombed those too. So I had to take all these remedial classes just to get to where I wanted to go. So long story short, it took me 3 years to get a two-year degree. Oh well, right? So here I am. It's 2006 at the time. And I graduate with an associate's in sports journalism, and I was proud, and I didn't know what was next. I had no idea. Dad, what do I do? Now it's time to get a job. Okay, I don't know about that. So I'm working. Don't get me wrong. I'm working. I'm doing all these little half-ass jobs here and there, working for like fucking CBS, and I'm managing a Halloween store in the holiday season, and turned into a Christmas store, and all sorts of side hustle, and I'm trying to make some money as a kid. And then I landed the dream job of becoming a Zamboni driver. That's right. I started in the kitchen of United Skates of America. If you're a local kid, you'll know what that is. That was the skating rink that I went to when I was 16 years old, 15 years old, all these teen nights and shit, and a couple skates where I had no fucking couple. I had nobody to skate with me. I know all the girls were like, aw, yeah, no, it's true. I had no fucking couple skate. But, yeah, so anyway, so what do? I have, you know, the side hustle's there, but where do I go? I go to fucking United Skates of America. I start flipping burgers. That's right. Dave Sturcio was a burger flipper, and I don't even eat meat. And that's another podcast for another day. But then after that, and realizing, okay, I got to do something else. I love this. I love talking. I love commentary. That's something I've always loved. And I was like, wow, you know, from growing up with Jim Ross and King and Michael Cole and, all, you know, even Gorilla and Heenan, and even my favorite, you know, Marv Albert and fucking John Madden. And my mom always said, and this is something that I definitely have to thank her for, because she would never let me not believe it. And she said, my son is going to be the next John Madden. He knows so much. He knows too much for his own good. He's going to be good at it because he knows how to talk, blah, blah, blah. So here comes a commercial on the radio when I'm with my dad one day, and it's for the Connecticut School of Broadcasting. So what is that? It is not in Connecticut. Well, it started in Connecticut, and then it branched off into New Jersey, New York, a couple campuses. And I said, Dad, I think this is what I want to do. I want to learn how to be on the radio. I want to learn how to be on TV. I want to learn video production. I want to learn all this shit. I already got the writing part down. Let me further my education. So like I said, he's given me everything. He has. I don't have any college debt. I got shit ton of credit card debt, but I have no college debt because college was paid for in full by my father. And the Connecticut School of Broadcasting for a 6-month course was like 10 grand. And 10 grand for a kid my age was like, there's no fucking way. My dad paid for that shit in full. Knowing that this was my dream, that I wanted to do it, he said, all right, I believe in you. So here I was. Start the Connecticut School of Broadcasting in 2006. As soon as I got my associates in my hand, I ran over there and I started that. That just so happened to open so many cool doors. Reason being is that the school was only like three nights a week. I think it was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in Hasbrook Heights, New Jersey, which is right next to East Rutherford, which is right next to Giant Stadium, or MetLife Stadium, whatever the fuck you want to call that cesspool. Clearly, I'm a Cowboys fan, so bear with me. But anyway, so yeah, so I was going to school. The trade school there, I was learning a lot of stuff, you know, how to talk on the radio, how to video produce. If I can dig up my fucking tapes, I know I have them somewhere, my audition tapes and stuff to send to companies. boy, was I either bad or just nervous or just wasn't confident in myself. But again, getting passing grades. Here's a little side story, fun fact. Me and this kid, Phil, who, you know, I don't know if he listens to this. He is a big time MMA guy over in Vegas right now. And that's right. Like, he graduated the same time I did, and he moved out to Vegas to cover mixed martial arts. And it's fucking awesome. And you know, it's great that a couple of my guys that I went to school with, my buddy Rob Pepitone, is working for Sirius NASCAR. He's doing great things. My buddy Pat DeJamos started his own company called Mayday Productions. He does video and editing for local New Jersey high schools and stuff like that, which is just incredible. So a lot of these people are doing big things. So, you know, it comes and goes. And we have this one teacher who's our sports reporting teacher, our sports class teacher, and he goes by the name of Dave LaGreca. Now, Dave LaGreca is, if you know the name, great. If you don't, I'm going to inform you. He is the host of SiriusXM's Busted Open Radio, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, talk radio when it comes to every day, 5 days a week on SiriusXM, talking about pro wrestling. Now, back then, we latched onto each other. He knew I was a big sports fan, but me and my friend Phil wanted to do our final on pro wrestling. We wanted to talk pro wrestling, and Dave LaGreca, hand of God, told me that we couldn't do it because pro wrestling was not a sport. Okay, pro wrestling was not a sport, so I couldn't do it in sports broadcasting in my final, my radio final where you get to team up with somebody and do like a little radio show. We couldn't do it. Fast forward, now he hosts a 5 day a week wrestling show. So how the tides have turned. I have him to thank a lot because after this broadcasting school, everybody kind of went their own way, and I couldn't find my way first until I got this big book where it was like this big binder with like internships where you can apply. I mean, you weren't guaranteed to get anything, but the Connecticut School of Broadcasting, I don't know if they still do this now, but they provide you with a book where you can look through, and it's like a fucking catalog on where you want to intern. I see the New York Jets, and I'm like, fuck, man, like, this is my chance. I can get in into the NFL, like, they're production interns and shit like that. This is going to be great. I apply for the Jets. I get a phone call about 2 weeks later from a man named Steve Venditti from the New York Giants. They called me up and said, would you like to come in for an interview? And I was like, yes, of course. And in my head, I'm like, why fucking I apply for the Jets? What's going on here? And I even said that. I was like, this is the Giants, right? He's like, yep, we know you apply for the Jets. They're not hiring at the time, but we are. And I'm like, all right, let's do it. So keep in mind, I have a Dodge Dakota at the time with a huge Cowboys sticker on the back of it. Did not take it off for the interview. Drove right into the Giants stadium with it on. Went in there. The first thing they asked me in my interview, Joe Scacciaferro of Ferro Productions, who's still rocking it because I see him every Sunday with him and his son and his crew for the Giants. I see him every Sunday still on TV, which is pretty cool. He says, big Giant fan, you follow the Giants? And I didn't say anything. I just looked at him and I gave him a look. I don't know what kind of look I gave him, but he says, oh no, he was that look has Dallas Cowboys written all over it. And I just smirked and he's like, do we kick you out now or do we let you like give your credentials? And I was like, well, if you let me talk, I'll tell you what I can bring to the table. Long story short, I get hired by the New York Giants. So that's an internship. So my broadcast career all of a sudden is jumping the fuck off. Now, to not get sidetracked too much, during this time, I didn't mention them earlier, but you know, going through high school and middle school and grammar school and even after high school, I had a best friend named John. John was a year younger than me, so he was always one grade younger. John was a dude I latched onto while playing baseball in Fords, and it was something that a dude where I felt like, wow, man, me and him really connect. And his family, phenomenal people. Like, they took me in like nobody's business. Like, it was, they took me on family vacations when I was younger. I got to go to Disney World, Baltimore, fucking, where else? There was, Baltimore was fun. Cooperstown, New York. His father took me to the Baseball Hall of Fame before my dad could. You know what I mean? Like, they were fantastic people. So John was my best friend, and just so happened that John was a huge wrestling fan. So it was one of those things where I was really excited. Like, oh shit, you know, like, he likes wrestling. I like wrestling. He loves sports. I love sports. Like, this is like a fucking, this is great. You know, like, this is going to be my best friend forever. And he was. And let me tell you something. You know, him being the Niners fan that he was, a Seattle Mariners fan, a Devils fan, and a fucking, well, he was a Knicks fan, so we did have one team in common, but, you know, it was always a good, friendly, healthy rivalry. So we grew up together, and, you know, we did the whole backyard wrestling, trampoline stuff, and then we said, you know what, fuck it, let's become professional wrestlers, let's do it, you know, let's make that the goal. And that was when we were younger. I was like 15 years old. We were like, you know what, whenever we're old enough, we can do this, you know what I mean? And we just, you know, we did the whole backyard thing. We had our own little backyard federation like everybody else did. Some still do right now and, well, whatever. But we had, you know, the bond was just inseparable. The families loved each other. Like, it was just one of those things where I was very grateful and very, very happy that John had come into my life in a time where I didn't have a lot of friends. I may have felt like I was popular, but nobody was clicking like me and him. So anyway, as I got older, you know, there was one time right before the Giants internship started, there was not a crisis, but like his sister had called me over, said, you know, there's something going on at the house. We're going to need you to help out, to be there for him. And I'm like, what the fuck could possibly be happening? You know, like, what's wrong with my friend? Like, everything's fine. You know, like, I from my standpoint, we never skipped a beat. So I get to his house one day, and I've said this in previous episodes, I'm no shame in saying it, because this is a life event, and this is where, you know, where support and caring for somebody, no matter what their beliefs are, is important. And I went to his house. Sister told me, he's in the bedroom, right? He's in his room right now. Go talk to him. He's also got a friend in there. You might want to introduce yourself to him too. So I was like, okay, fine. I go in there. I introduce myself. And I had a weird vibe about it. And I didn't know what was going on. And John right there, like, bluntly told me and me first out of anybody else besides his immediate family that he was gay. And he's been battling it for years. And, you know, for me, it was kind of weird. I was like, fuck, man, I've slept over your house, dude. You know what I mean? Like, we've swam together. We've fucking wrestled together. We've slept in the same bed on vacations. You know what I mean? Like, to me, it's all a culture shock. And I'm just like, oh, all right. You know, like, where the fuck did this come from? You know? But unfortunately for him, and this is not a knock on his perfect family, because they were just that for me. They were a perfect family for me. They couldn't accept it right away, and it was killing him, literally. And I couldn't. There was only so much I can do. And I said to him, I said, dude, you know what, once this comes out and you start getting public with this, and you want to put your default picture on MySpace with you and your boyfriend or whatever the case may be, it's you're gonna get some backlash. You're gonna feel a little awkward. You're gonna feel like shit, because some people are not going to accept it. Me, for one, I told him, I said, dude, look, I love you no matter what. If you need me, I'm here. And that's it. And that's how we left it. And obviously we drifted apart a little bit, because he was heavy into his relationship. And I was, listen, I've had every failed relationship known to man. God bless my lucky stars right now where I'm at right now, because boy, I sucked at everything. I couldn't keep a girlfriend. It was terrible. But when I had John in my life as a best friend, I didn't care about girls. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, okay, like, this one broke up with me, I don't give a fuck. I'm going to play Madden with John. You know what I mean? So this was different for me, because he kind of stepped away from our friendship. It hurt. It definitely pained me from the inside, but what was I going to do? You know, like, I couldn't do anything. That's a lifestyle. And back then, it was a lot harder to accept than it is today. Today, people are coming out left and right, and that's great, and I'm glad, and I kind of wish that people would come out a little sooner, because now I know the struggle that some people go through in this situation. So now, you know, me and John drift apart, but here comes the Giants internship, and I tell him about it. And one of the best conversations I ever had was about a week before I left for Albany, New York, because that's where the Giants had their training camp, and that's where I was to report to. He called me on the phone. He said, I'm having a hard time with all this. You know, like, everybody's being really mean and shitty about it, and I don't know what to do. And I was like, well, dude, fight through it. Everything's going to be okay. Hey, man, by the way, I got hired by the Giants. He's like, no fucking way. Like, this is great. This is what you've been working for. He's like, I have no doubts in my mind that you're going to make it. You're going to do it, you know? And I even told him that day. I was like, look, man, on the side, we got it. We got to get this wrestling thing going. You know, as a joke, as a side joke between me and him, saying that wrestling could still be a thing, you know? And then, you know, a week later, I received a text message. I received, here's the weird part about everything that kind of transpired on a Wednesday night right before I left for training camp. I put my phone on silent because I needed sleep. I had to get up at 4 a.m. to get up to Albany and report to East Rutherford. And I was going to bust it up to Albany with the other interns. My phone was on silent, so I would get no phone calls, no texts, no nothing. And I didn't have a girlfriend at the time, I don't think. And if I did, oops. So I had no idea if anybody were to contact me. My dog, Apollo, at the time, okay, he's a boxer. He's scratching at my door. He's a puppy. And he never comes down to my stairs. And now I was in the basement of my dad's house. That's where I was. That was where all the magic happened, in my room in the basement. So I have Apollo scratching at the door in the middle of the night, and he never comes down to my room. And I'm like, what the fuck, you know? I'm like, so I let him in. I'm like, what's up, dude? Like, what's going on? And he just jumps on my bed. And I'm like, all right, he wants to sleep with me. That's kind of fucking weird because he never has. And then I check my phone to see what time it is, and I got two missed calls from John's sister. And the running joke between me and John's sister back then was that I always wanted to hook up with her. She was a lot older than me. She was like 7 years older than me at the time. So when I was 15, 16, she was, you know, well into her 20s and early 30s. So she was probably even 10 years older than me, actually. But that was always the running joke. So I called her back, and I'm like, is this the call I've been waiting for? Like a joke. And she's bawling her eyes out, and I had no idea what happened. She had told me that they found John dead, and I was floored. I didn't know how to handle it. I knew I just talked to him a week before about how he was struggling. And obviously I asked how it happened. They tell me how it happened, and it broke me. And I was like, this can't be happening. You know, this is all like a dream. I'm dreaming right now because it's the night before my biggest opportunity of my life. And I get this phone call, and I'm just like, no, just rewind. You know what I mean? Tell me a different story. So tell me something. It was true. They found John dead on the couch, peacefully in his sleep. And people can make their theories of what they think happened. But I think he died of a broken heart. I think he died of self-inflicted stuff. And it's hard to say because, you know, that's one of the, you know, the hardest things to deal with, especially the immediate family, knowing that their baby's gone before the age of 20. And I didn't know how to handle it. I went to the internship. I did. And I'm, you know, with my boss, I told my boss what happened. He said, what are you doing, man? Like, go home. And I couldn't. I said, this is the biggest opportunity of my life. I can't do this. John would have, and you know, this is something that his sister has told me, you know, John would have wanted me to go and start my first couple days with the Giants. It was going to be the hardest thing in the world, but do it. You know, he told me I'm going to make it. So how else would I have made it if I just quit right there on the spot? So I start the Giants internship. I come home about three days later for the funeral. They chose me to read the eulogy. So here I am in front of his whole family and friends and loved ones, and I'm telling everybody about how me and him stayed up literally 30 hours straight playing Madden, and how his mom would deliver a fucking PlayStation controller when we broke one at my house. She would get up and deliver a controller to my house because he was an asshole and he broke the controller. So it was like, it was really hard for me. That year was supposed to be the biggest and best year ever when I got hired, and it turned out to be the very worst. The Giants internship was fantastic. I wish I would have taken it a little bit more serious. I mean, not that I didn't, but there was a couple times where I'm like, I'm not paid to do this. I'm not paid enough, blah, 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 blah. I wasn't paid at all. It was an unpaid internship. The perks of the business were, you know, getting to eat lunch with Bob Papa and play PlayStation with Jeff Beagles and meet Eli Manning and have a beer with Jeremy Shockey. And those are the cool things as a sports fan, even as a Cowboys fan. When the Cowboys came in, I got to meet, you know, T.O. I got to meet Romo. I got to fucking shake hands with Joe Buck. Unfortunately, Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. I got to meet these people. I met John Madden when the Giants took me on the road to Baltimore. And I met John Madden. He thought I was a fucking player. You know what I mean? I was a bigger dude. So he's like, oh, you should be fucking suiting up. And I was like, no, man, I should be playing your video game. But like the internship itself was so cool. There was just so much going on, and it was a whirlwind. It went like that, man. It was so fucking fast. And before I knew it, it was it was over. And unfortunately, as a Cowboy fan, you know, if you're a football fan, what happened in 2007, I got to experience the entire playoff run and the Giants winning the Super Bowl that year. So somehow God had a plan for me to be there when they were hoisting the trophy. And I was just like, ugh, you got to be kidding me. But yeah, so that was it was a memorable season. It was a memorable year, but it was the start of my chase to become a pro broadcaster, an announcer, something in the NFL, something in pro sports, something, you know. That Christmas, I went to his family's house, and his sister had gifted something for me. Now, 2 years ago, 2 years prior to this, I'm sorry, 2 years prior to this, she went to Las Vegas and with her boyfriend at the time or whatever. She came back with this massive replica Ric Flair WCW Championship belt. She gave it to John as a gift. They gifted it for me, and they gave it to me and said, there's nobody better to have this who would appreciate this more than you. So that belt stuck with me forever. I still have it, and it's, you know, going to be hanging in my man cave when it's all done. But right then and there, it was 2007, I said, I have to do this wrestling thing. I don't know when. I don't know how. I don't know where. I'm in no good shape for it. My best attribute was my talking personality, where I can cut a promo in front of fucking nobody. You know what I mean? So it was going to happen. I just didn't know when. Years go by. I'm talking years. And it sucks because these are lost time years in my youth to chase this dream. And I finally, 2011 hits. I hit a rock bottom again where I just put on all this weight, and I was just, something had to give. So 2012 in March, so this is 5 years after the death of my best friend, I go to this independent wrestling show entitled Pro Wrestling Syndicate. It's March of 2012. So the main card is featured would be Sid Vicious, Sid Justice, Sid whatever the fuck you want to call him, versus Matt Hardy in the main event. I said, this is great. I see a flyer on the post, and I said, you know what? I got to bring my boys. It's been a while since we went to a wrestling event. I would love to see it. So that night, I meet a guy named Pat Buck, and this was March. Little did I know that there was about to be a school opening up in June of 2012. So I said, I introduced myself. He won't remember this. There's no way. There was a quick interaction because of something that he did that night. Sid no-showed an event. I know, sounds familiar, right? Sid no-showed the event, and Jay Lethal came out dressed as Sid. And it was one of the most entertaining main events ever. You know, I've never seen anything like it. It was so cool. But the better part was that Pat Buck stood in the middle of the ring, dialed Sid's number, put him on speaker, and said, I want you to know how all these people feel about you no-showing our card. And we all got to fucking, cheer, boo, tell him he sucks, blah, 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 all to his voicemail. And we knew it was his voicemail because Pat played his voicemail recording on the microphone. So I was like, this guy is unbelievable. How cool is this guy to do this in front of a live crowd where there had to be I'm not even kidding you, like 1,000 people in the crowd that night. Huge. They had like a super card, and it would translate, obviously. But so I meet Pat that night. He tells me about he's opening up a school, or at least he had the idea of doing it. And I'll never forget. I went to John's family, who I still kept in touch with at the time, 5 years, 5 years after his death. And I said, it's time. I'm going to live out the dream for me and him at the same time. Like, simultaneously, he will be with me while I do this. I'm going to become a professional wrestler. Sounded crazy. Told my parents. They were just giving me the whole crazy eyes. Like, what are you fucking thinking about? And I said, you know what? I'm making nothing of this broadcasting thing, and I thought I would get some cool opportunities, and I'm not getting them. Like, I'm applying to places and just not getting the job. So income option number two, become a pro wrestler. Get to the WWE, make millions of dollars, right? Right. So that's exactly what I set out to do. In June of 2012, if I remember off the top of your head, people that you'll understand or know of, me, Damian Gibbs, Craven Varro, Ruthless Ray Smith, Sean, I think of Black Hollywood, I think of Black Star, Sean Edwards, sorry. Bobby Wayward was there, Mike Dell was there, not in the original class, but they came on like right before the first Rumble. Guys like Chris Payne, they all started showing up in those months between June and September. So those first 3 months of the school, I met a lot of my boys that I'm still boys with now. And That's how it all started, man. And I started taking the bumps, and I was hurting. And I, listen, I quit like six times before, you know, it was all said and done. Six times I said, I can't do this. I suck. There's no way. I couldn't bump. I couldn't even bump. I could not flat back bump. Until one day, Sammy Callahan was there. Jay Lethal was there. And I remember I took like 75 reps at trying to bump correctly. And I just kept hitting my elbows and my fucking head kept ricocheting off the damn mat. It was brutal. And I was so pissed. I got out of the ring and I like punched a wall or something like that. I was pissed. And Jay Lethal pulls me aside and he said, well, what's the deal? You know? And I was like, I can't do this. I suck. I'm like, I'm fucking horrible at this. He's like, how long have you been training? I was like, I don't know, like 2 months, 2.5 months. He's like, what are you going nuts about for? And I was like, I want to be better. I want to be the best. I want to be better than everybody in class. Like, yada, yada, yada. I want to be the leader and bullshit. He's like, you see those trainers in there? And he's pointing at Pat and he's pointing at Sammy Callahan and others. I said, yeah. He goes, are they frustrated with you? Are they mad at you for not bumping correctly? I said, no, they're not. He goes, okay, so if your trainers aren't mad at you, why are you mad at yourself? You know, like, you're new. Start over, you know, like, get better. And ever since then, it was just, okay, you know what? Took the ball, ran with it. September of 2012, had my first match. Let me tell you something. When we were all coming up with our names and stuff, I had no idea what I was going to call myself. I was like, I don't want to be a character. I just want to be me. I don't want to be a gimmick. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be the boogeyman, or you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to put face paint on, whatever the case may be. I just wanted my name. I didn't know what to do. So I'm at work one day, and I'm working for my dad. And God bless my dad, because he let me work with him for 3 years in his warehouse. And let me tell you, it was awesome, because I got to work with my dad every day and get to see him every morning and just work with him all day long. And we get along because there's so much we have in common. He's my best friend. So, you know, one day I'm Googling names like fucking Aztec warrior names or whatever, like Greek mythology, blah, blah, blah. And I saw something, I can't remember what it was. And it said, something that causes mass destruction. And I was like, destruction. That's a cool word. I like the word. How do I make it mine? So I went back to the school, and Pat had told us one night after class, you know, write down 10 names. 10 names you want to use. And I had some bad ones. I had like the New Jersey's great Dave Sturch or Dave James or some shit. James is my middle name. And they were bad. They were real bad. But at the end, I had Dave Destruction Sturchio. The name Destruction. And he goes, why don't you change the name? Like, how do you make it yours? I said, how about I put D, like my name, hyphen Destruction. So now it looks like Dave Sturchio. It really does. Like Dave Destruction looks like if you look at Struction fast, it could look like Sturchio. So I was like, this is perfect. So Dave Destruction Sturch was born. September 2012, we go into this huge battle royal. And here's the gimmick, folks. If you sold the most tickets, you won the fucking battle royal. That's how they pitched it. And I said, I'm fucking winning this thing. I'm not going in there to get thrown over the top rope second and just wave to my friends and say, yeah, that was a good shot. I said, no. I'm winning this fucking thing. Not only did I win, okay, let's just say the second place was Damian Gibbs, who I fucking finished with. We were the final two. And I believe he sold 25 or 30 tickets, maybe even 40. I'll give him 40 of his friends and family. I sold, and not even kidding you, I started talking to Mike DeCrosta, who was running Big Shots at the time, and I said, let's do some kind of promotion where if I sell tickets here to the fucking regulars of the bar and all my friends and everybody in Ford's and every single living Sturchio, we'll have an after party at Big Shots. And he's like, fucking sold. Let's do it. So here I am. I hand over money to Pat for the value of 152 tickets. Okay, that's not even, I'm not making this up. That's the number I sold. And every single living Sturchio was there. Any single one of my closest friends were there chanting. And I give Jared, who from Big Shots at the time, he was a bartender. He was out there with my buddy James Kang. And there were a lot of my friends out there. But all of a sudden, I'm in the ring and I'm doing my thing. And there's a rumble happening and I'm fucking nervous, sweating bricks. All of a sudden, I hear somebody yell, D, real loud. And then the other half of my friends yelled Destruction. So there's this chant that's breaking out. And I'm like, what the fuck? And here's a side story. That chant broke out in match 2 of the night. where people were chanting my name and our match wasn't until the fucking end, like, or middle of the end. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, even Pat and other people and Kevin Matthews, who knew me from nobody else, look at me like, oh, okay, this kid's got something going on. Like, there's a little bit of a following here. So I go out there. Obviously, the rest is history. I win the fucking thing. It was the coolest moment of my life. But the best part was that if I look down at my gloves, which people made fun of me, I wanted some kind of character to cross between. And this was not a joke at the time. And obviously, it became a running joke with my friends. I was a big Ryback fan. I was a big Brock Lesnar fan. So how do I cross the two? Let's wear MMA shorts. Let's wear a singlet, MMA shorts on top of it, and then MMA gloves, and then fucking wrestling shoes. That was it. I didn't have the great gear that everybody else had, to me it worked. I was hiding my flaws. My legs have always been shitty and not big, and I've always been made fun of by fucking Damian Gibbs until he's blue in the face. But I had to quiet the bad parts about me. So that was my gear. It was red and black. I represented Woodbridge Barons. I said that would be the cool thing to do because that's where I'm from. So that night comes and goes. We do an after party, and I feel like a superstar, and I felt so good, and it was no better feeling than getting my hand raised by the ref, looking down at my glove. I had one glove left on because I had two gloves on. I took one off so I can throw some chops on Gibbs. And my one glove that I had left on, I looked down, and on the wrist, it's in stitched JD, which was John's initials. And I was like, boy, we did it. Like, and I say this a lot over the last 5.5 years of being around wrestling. I feel like I understand that PWS and WrestlePro may not be WWE, but to me, it's making it. It made an impact on the independent scene where for that first year, I was getting written about because people were chanting my name at Monday Night Raw and nobody understood what the fuck was going on. WrestleZone wrote an article. I still have it because obviously I'm a fucking mark for like everybody else. But, Destruction chant breaks out in East Rutherford. You know what I mean? Like this first year that was going on, the first 3 months that was happening was surreal. Like I couldn't understand what had been transpiring. And I was like, whoa, you know, what the fuck? You know, like this is crazy. And then Kevin Matthews, the marketing genius that he is, he says, you know what? This kid keeps bringing a huge crowd every month. Let's put him in the stable that's happening at PWS. And that was Reality Check. At the time, it was him, Devin Moore, and Alex Reynolds were the three members of Reality Check. And they said, you know what? We're going to do something different. You've been feuding with Damian Gibbs for 3 months. We're going to make you guys a tag team. And we thought to myself, all right, fuck, this is kind of weird, but let's do it. You know, like, shit, we're about to be in Reality Check. We're about to be the mainstays of every single card, no matter what. And there was other students that were kicking ass, taking names, but we were going to be on this fucking pedestal all of a sudden. I was just like, oh, my God, how do I handle this right? What do I do? Sometimes I handled it right. Sometimes I handled it wrong. It's just pro wrestling and being a rookie. I was a fucking four, not even a year in, and I'm being put in the biggest stable of the company. So we do this run where we entitle ourselves Destruction and Seduction, and we have this tag team run. Never won the tag straps, and that was something that I was made fun of and talked to and sat down about, that wins and losses in pro wrestling do not matter, and that couldn't be more truthful now that you break it down 5.5 years later, despite what's going on current TV, like my friend and fucking former trainer and trainer of the Creative Pro School in New York, Kurt Hawkins, got a 0-150 losing streak. And that's something to be said for. I'm going to buy the shirt tonight, as a matter of fact, as I'm recording this. But wins and losses don't matter. And I was very, very boo-hoo about wins and losses and never getting that tag team title like shot. We got the shot and they dusty finished it. Meaning, if you're not a wrestling fan, you don't understand what that means. We win the titles, but we did it dirty behind the referee's back. Another referee comes out, says, no, no, no. You know, he hit this guy with the belt, reverses the decision, boom, we're disqualified. Titles never happened. Before I knew it, me and Gibbs were breaking up. We were going back to singles, and that was it. Reality Check was done. That run was over. But when we got back to Rawway in 2013, it was time to do my own thing and create my own persona and try, you know, to be a singles guy. I beat Gibbs in a one-on-one match in which they tagged me up again with the Big O. He saves the day. I get beat up by current Bobby Wayward, Chris Payne, Anthony Fabry, and Anthony Bowens. Okay, they all jump me, and I need a partner. Here comes the Big O, another sensation. We call ourselves the Powers of Destruction. Here we go. We're about to hit the momentum train. Bang, I get hit in the head with a chair in October of 2013, and I throw a temper tantrum about bleeding. Yeah, that's right. We're in pro wrestling, and I'm bitching about bleeding. Did I suffer a concussion that night? Yeah, fucking damn right I did. But I was bleeding. I was nervous. I was scared, and I fucking punched a wall, and I like got the attention of like Sergeant Slaughter and Lita, and they were looking at me like, who the fuck is this, and why is he acting like this? He's an asshole. So right away, you know, I got the talk from Pat that week. Maybe this isn't for you anymore. Maybe, you know, maybe you can't handle it. And this is, I was questioning myself. I said, you know what? No, I can. I will. I'll conquer all this. Let's do it. So a couple more tag team matches happen. No title shots or anything like that. Nothing happens. And then right before January of 2014, Big O breaks his leg. Okay. So now tag team's over again. So now Dave Destruction's back on the singles market. And what's he going to do? How am I going to react? Who's going to be my feud? So February comes and goes. I don't have a match. I believe we probably didn't even put on a card. Actually, you know what? I did run through a couple singles matches. Bobby Wayward comes to mind, which was a great run. That was so cool. I had such a good time with that one. And I did a couple singles things in the SWF with Rob Fury. So I joined up with a whole new... I went outside my box, and I went outside my comfort zone, and I wrestled for the SWF, which at the time was called Genesis Championship Wrestling, GCW, and then they rebranded it to SWF. But I had done a lot of cool shit, and then in that summer, the summer before, I'm sorry, when me and Gibbs had broken up, I got to wrestle down and got booked in North Carolina, where me and Gibbs wrestled each other in North Carolina, and Flair Country, you know, it was such a cool opportunity. These opportunities were coming and going, like, very fast, and everything was growing fast, like, and I was having the time of my fucking life, I really was. And so March 2014 comes the infamous graphic where I was told, I was on the phone with Pat Buck, and he's like, what do you think about working Duggan? And I'm like, Hacksaw Jim Duggan? Like Jim Duggan? He's like, yeah. And I was like, yeah, like let's do it. Like I grew up watching this guy. Let's fucking do it. And he said, he's easy. He's not going to lose. I said, I don't care. You know, remember a year ago, I'm like, what the fuck? Why won't he lose? I want to win. I want to beat the legend. You know, but this time I was like, shit, man, let's do it. Like, this is great. So again, I got to promote a really big fight for myself. You know, people make fun of me because it's probably my only like really big claim to fame is that I wrestled Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And so did half the other fucking independent wrestlers in the world. But at the time I was like, this is great. So fast forward, the match happens, you know, I'm getting booed, and this is like one of those experiences where I'm like, oh man, like, why aren't they cheering for me? Oh, I don't know, maybe because you're going against Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and he's chanting fucking USA the entire time, so there's no chance in hell that you're going to be cheered in this night. And in Belleville, too, Belleville, New Jersey, it's where I was born, no bullshit, Belleville, Claremont, I was born there, so I fucking pitched it as that to all my friends. I'm like, I'm going home, everybody, you know, like fucking LeBron, or Carmelo, or whatever, going home. But that match comes and goes. Unbelievable. Had such a great time. Like, he was such a cool dude. But then the next month, what's next for me? I have no idea. And I know this is running really long. So hopefully, you know, I'll get to your questions and then, you know, wrap it up. But I feel like this is a cool story, and I like to hear myself talk, especially for the first episode of 2018. I want to introduce myself to those who may not know the story. So anyway, so what's next? All right, Dave, we're going to put you in the Suicidal Six-Way, which is a match not built for me, okay? I didn't know what the fuck was going on. I'm like, wait a minute, so you want me to do dives, and you want me to be hardcore and jump off the top rope, and what am I going to do? So I had spots all written out. You know, Matt McIntosh was actually making his debut, I believe, in that match too. And I was like, going over with him, like, oh, we can do this spot, and I'll spear you through the ropes, and like, we had all these things planned out. So I'm at training one night in April of 2014, early April, right after the Hacksaw match. So I'm feeling like a million bucks. I'm feeling like I'm the fucking man of this school. I just fucking blah, 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 you know, like all for no reason whatsoever. And I'm doing this drill that they currently still do at the school today. It's a four corners drill where if you're standing in a corner, there's one man in the middle and he has to deliver four moves in a row. So I'm second on this little rotation here. And the guy will be remain nameless. He's a monster and he's from an island. So I was just supposed to take a headlock takeover. And then if you know what a headlock takeover is, I'm hoping maybe Pat Buck puts it in the trainer's eye of his podcast, but it's literally simply you're in a headlock, you drop down to one knee, you post with your arm, and the guy basically uses their body and flips over, and then you're laying on top of them. You know what a headlock takeover is. If you don't, fucking YouTube it. But I'm supposed to take this, and I was in the headlock form, and before I can even jump, he threw me over. He threw me over so fast that I don't remember what happened, but all I know is his entire body fell on me as my legs were underneath me, and I felt the popping sensation and felt like it was immediately on fire, my right knee. And I'm like, something's wrong. I couldn't get up. I had to be lifted out of the ring and like kind of peeled out of the ring by Moff and a couple of the other trainers and other guys. And, you know, my girlfriend at the time, who is now my wife, picks me up, takes me to JFK Hospital. And, you know, they straighten my leg out. They ice it. They said, you know, they do x-rays, no bones broken. I'm like, this is great. You know, there ain't no bones broken. It was just a scare. But I still can't walk. And I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? So obviously the MRI happens. And Mr. Dave Destruction, you have a torn ACL and a blown meniscus all in one shot. And I was just like, cool, cool. And I just started a new job on the side where I was a warehouse manager. Again, goes back to my dad teaching me how to run a warehouse. And I branched off and got my own job making a lot of money. And I blew it. And I blew it because of a torn ACL. They said they were going to hold my position, but this is America, folks. Nobody holds their promises anymore. And I was fired or let go because of my lengthy absence. So now what? What do I do? I have a torn ACL. My wrestling career is on hold. And to me, I know how I am. I know myself more than anybody else when it comes to my body. And I knew wrestling could possibly be over forever because I don't know how if I'm going to be able to battle back through all the rehab and shit like that. So what do I do? I start the rehab and I'm feeling good about myself and things are in motion. And what do? I experiment. How do I get better faster? Contact this guy. Give me some fucking steroids. Okay. Let me heal up faster. And it's a known thing that's something that steroids will help with the recovery of a torn whatever. Could be anything. So I start experimenting with that. What does that do? That puts me on a downward spiral of just anger, depression, just turned into a very, very bad human being. And it was the worst and darkest times since John died. Like, it was bad. And I didn't know where I was going. And I didn't have a job. And I didn't know what to do. So I get contacted by this guy, Jay Aletto. And you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook and stuff like that. He is the man who runs Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. It's a YouTube sensation. Not YouTube sensation. It's a... whatchamacallit? It is a... what is it? It's like a thing. It's a, why can't I think of the whole, whatchamacallit? It's a, it's a network, like a podcast network. And the one guy asked me, he's like, how would you like to start your own podcast? Like, you have a voice for it. You know what you're talking about. Like, you're going to be out of commission for a little while. Why don't you do that? And I said, all right, well, how do I do it? So he tells me his host name and it's on Blog Talk Radio, that if you know what that is, that it's, you know, not the greatest forum, but I was like, hey, man, if you're going to promote it, let's do it. Let's roll with it. So in come Thursday Night Destruction. And it was my podcast in which I ran about, I want to say like 35, 40 episodes while I was down. But while I was down, I was making connections again. It's something I've been doing even as of recent. You know, like, how do you market yourself when you don't know where you're going? You don't know what's happening next. So I marketed myself. I started applying for jobs in my field of broadcasting, and I want to do this again, and let's do that. Like, let's go down that road, and let's see if I can make some waves. In come Sirius NFL Radio or Sirius XM Sports. They found my application. They want to interview me. Now, keep in mind, who works at Sirius XM Sports? Dave LaGreca. So Dave LaGreca, it all comes full circle from broadcasting school to 7 years later at Sirius XM, and he put a great word in for me. So did a couple of my coworkers that went to the Connecticut School of Broadcasting, and so did a producer, Mike Riker, who was a huge wrestling fan. So it was very easy to talk to him about where I've been in my life in the last 3 years, 2 years. And here I was, boom, hired by Sirius XM Radio. I could barely walk and I didn't care. You know what I mean? Like, I was doing my rehab and everything was cool, but I could barely walk, and it was something special. And I knew that I was going to rehab a little harder so I can walk the streets of New York City to go to work. And I was back. I felt back. I was like, this is great. Here I come. I'm going to make a fucking return to the ring soon too. I'm going to feel good about myself. Everything's going to be great. And it was for a little while. And realizing that the money was very piss poor. I mean, it was a part-time job, folks. I mean, that's what it is. You're not going to get all the hours. Some of my guys who are on this network still grinding it out for SiriusXM. And that's great. And that's just like a side hustle job for their real passions that are growing right now. And I'm talking about Jeff Berga from the High Spot podcast. So shout out to him. Go subscribe to those guys too. So, you know, the grind was there. I was going to get back in the ring. 2015 comes around. I get into the Rumble. Okay. I'm coming back. It's time. Like, I'm not waiting any longer. I've been doing. Now here's where it all starts. We start to have a little bit of a following at PWS where a couple production companies want to work with us, meaning we're going to need lights, we're going to need commentary, we're going to need just overall better production. So in come Mr. Injured Dave Destruction to the rescue, and I'm like, let me do commentary. So I did commentary, and I sat down with Sam Roberts, Ashley Massaro at one time, David Adams was the ring announcer and doing commentary at that time. So here I was sitting in there, and then all of a sudden PWS gets a TV deal, and I'm like, oh shit, like what? Okay, now Dave Destruction is going to be on WLNY at fucking 3 in the morning. So I said, abso-friggin-lutely, let's do this. So I was taking these opportunities. Now, I wasn't making any money while doing it, but I said, you know what, this is the way to do it while I'm hurt. So then I had to make the decision to either keep doing the commentary or try to get back in the ring. For whatever reason, I thought the commentary wasn't going to go places. I needed to get back in the ring. I was jonesing for it. I needed it. So January 2015 comes around, and I go out there. I make my comeback in a Rumble. I do a couple cool spots with the Blue World Order. It was awesome. I looked like shit because I had sweatpants on and fucking and a tank top. I wasn't confident with myself, and I said, oh, why doesn't Dave Destruction get up from the commentary table and go right in? And I had all intent on wearing a tank top and jeans. Like, I always wear a button down and jeans as a commentator, so it would make sense. I was doing squats in the back to try to get like warmed up, and I fucking split my jeans. So I had sweatpants, and that's what I went out in. I will continue to be made fun of by Curt Hawkins and James Silva and Raleigh for that, looking like a fucking gym dad or whatever I looked like at the time. That comeback happens. It was cool. It was surreal. What's next? How can I build my character back up? Get Dave a squash match against Eddie Franken, or you might know him now as Buster Jackson. And they schedule that for it's called the Parade of Champions. It was an all PWS event, not one outside vendor or not one outside talent other than our core guys. And they gave me a squash match, and I heard these welcome back chants that threw chills down my spine. It was just surreal. I come, I beat him up. He does the job for me. I can't thank him enough for making me look like a fucking rock star that night. And here I am. I'm back. Here we go. What's next? Nothing. So what do you mean nothing? Well, there was no real storyline for me to get a match the next month. And I didn't know what was happening. And then I got very bitter. And when I say bitter, I mean just angry with wrestling. I said, you know, I came all the way back from injury, you know, and they got nothing for me. And meanwhile, I don't deserve anything. Anybody who's been working for that year that I was gone deserves everything. And I was jaded. I wasn't giving myself any, you know, I wasn't given an excuse. You know what I mean? Like, it was bad. And I went on a podcast and I bashed the company that made me. And it was stupid. And something I paid the price for, because I was fired by PWS, and I was fired and told to go away by Pat Buck and Kevin Matthews. They told me to get out of town, and I did. And that summer, I worked a couple shows here and there for the SWF, and I was, you know, not, it doesn't matter, wins and losses, whatever. I was getting better. I was getting healthier. And everything was kind of just like wrestling wasn't going to happen. And like, I didn't know what to do. You know, PWS at the time was my only outlet that I knew that I would succeed in. So what happens in around December of, November of 2015. And that was 2015. If I'm getting this, like, I don't want to mess this up. 2015, 16. Yeah. And then last year. Yeah. All right. So 2015, I get a call from Shining Edward Jackson. It was this, you know what? It might have been December. It was a snowstorm. All I know is a snowstorm. I'm in the apartment with my my fiance at the time before we got married. And he, you know, I'm drinking, he's drinking, everybody's drinking at home that day because nobody can go anywhere. So I'm drinking whatever I was drinking at home. And he tells me, he's like, hey, man, they're going in a different direction. Like, I'm like, what do you mean? Like, who's going in what direction? You know, there's no more PWS. It's going away. And I'm like, what do you mean it's going away? Like, how? It's so successful. He's like, it's not going away. Pat's separating himself and creating something like totally new with the one guy who I didn't like, who obviously Pat didn't like because he's a fucking whatever he was. And I'm not going to bash anybody because I don't feel like it. He wasn't a good person. So Pat said, in come the idea of WrestlePro. And he goes, now's the time. Like, hit up Pat. Talk things out. Let's get it going. So they're starting this this promotion where it's going to be PWS versus Global Force Wrestling with Jeff Jarrett. And after this, it's going to be no more PWS. WrestlePro debuts the following month. So that event I went to and I attended, and the first person I saw when I walked in the building was Lauren, Pat's wife. And, you know, I hugged her and I said, I missed her so much. And like, it was just good to be around that again. Rahway Rec Center, a big event feel. I paid admission. Okay. I'm not entitled. I don't do that shit. I paid admission to go watch a show. And that night I was reunited with the Shining Wizards guys and I got to cut the shit with them and shoot the shit with them for an hour before the show. And here comes this show. And I watched the whole fucking thing. And at the end of it, they're all raising Pat up. So we are the champions, and you know, we defeated Global Force Wrestling, and I said, this is my chance now. I'm gonna go stand next to the entranceway. So when everybody who was out there congratulating Pat sees me, and some of them walk right by me, some of them stop to shake my hand and hug me, and they knew at that time that I was back. And what my role was gonna be was very undetermined, and I didn't know, but I said, you know what, this is where home is. And this is where it's going to be, and this is where it's all going to lead to. So I know this is going ridiculously long, but you know what? I'm rolling with it. This is the first episode, and you'll never hear a longer episode ever. So after that, it was back to training. What do you want to do, Dave? You want to be in the first show? You know, there's a Rumble. Okay, you're damn right I want to be in the first show. So here I was. I was entering the Rumble for, you know, the number one contender thing, you know, just like a Royal Rumble. Had my spot, got the welcome back chance, felt like $1 million, and I said, this is it, man. This is great. And going forward, you know, obviously pro wrestling takes summers off sometimes. WrestlePro was doing the same thing, and they were going to promote another show in September in which Cody Rhodes was going to debut for WrestlePro. And there was over the summer, we had one show. And I was doing a lot of like journalism stuff, like on the side, like the commentary wasn't there yet. And I said, Pat came up to me in the middle of the summer and he said, look, you got to choose. Let's break it down and let's see what you want to do and where you want to succeed at. And I thought to myself, it was a long road back physically to get back in the ring. Do I still want to do this all the time, get beat up, get paydays when I'm booked and go from there and try to succeed? Or do I go down the road of commentary, in which he offered that to me? He said, you could be the guy, like you could be the head guy, the head commentator of WrestlePro going forward. So the decision was that I was going to come back for one more match. And I said, this is how we're going to do it. This is going to be great. I'm going to jump into the ring and save the day. For Christopher Avery Kuehling, who's been tearing through the entire roster, just squash match after squash match, just crushing people. I'm going to come back, and I'm going to fight him. And I didn't think it was going to be the last match, because I said, you know what, maybe this catapults more shit. I don't know yet. Let's make that decision when we get there. So the storyline was going to be that this guy was going undefeated, and he was never going to be beaten. And then all of a sudden, hey, oh, Dave Destruction's back. So if anybody's going to beat the streak or you know, end his undefeated streak, and maybe it could be him. So I sell it like that. This event falls on my birthday, okay? So I'm like, oh my God, this can't be better, you know, as far as ticket sales and promotion and shit like that. This is going to be great. So I start training hard, you know, back in the ring, just moving around a little bit better at the gym, lifting heavy. This was going to be it. It was going to be a really good match. And I said it to Pat. I said, what better way would it be that if I trained and promoted the Christ out of this thing and then get some offense and Avery Kuehling just puts me out of my misery and continues his fucking winning ways and go on to bigger and better things. Like, I wanted to be a stepping stone. And you asked me that 3 years ago, and I'm like, fuck that. No way. It's my time, blah, 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 you know? But now I'm just like, this guy deserves nothing more than to be on top. And I'm talking about Christopher Avery Kuehling, you know, Big Ben Cromwell. He deserves everything. So let me get in there. Let me get my pop. Let me feel fucking that rush for a half a second, and then let's see what happens. So the match happens. If you were there and you saw it, you saw how it went down. I got some offense in, but ultimately they kicked the shit out of me. So much so that I registered my, out of, was it 16, 2012, 4 years, I registered my fifth concussion in wrestling on that match. I didn't know it was a concussion, and because after the match, I got back to the locker room, I changed into a polo, and I jumped on commentary with Sam Roberts. So I was just like, oh, everything's fine. I go home that night, and I'm just miserable, ill, nasty, just throwing up, just something's wrong. And, you know, ultimately, it led to a decision to stop, because I don't want to be a marshmallow. You know what I mean? I've endured a lot of concussions in my days, and I think that it's a very, obviously nowadays it's very, very seriously taken by both WWE and NFL and all sports. It had nothing to do with the knee. It was just literally just my head was getting rattled around, and I thought to myself, am I going to be able to do this? Like, can I continue to do this for as long as I want to do it and be okay? If I'm feeling the effects right now, and I'm, at the time I was 31 or I was 30 or whatever the case may be, in 2016, I was, what am I turning now? 33 and 18, 32, 31. Okay. So I get my brain scrambled, and I said to Pat after that, I said, I'm done. It's over. Like, that was my last match, and I'm willing and able to get behind the commentary table and do the best I can at it and see where that goes. And fast forward, you know, 2016, there was a couple commentary things where it was happening and started to take off. Me and Shiny Edward Jackson got behind the table a couple times, and we had a great time. 2017, last year as it started, there was one time, just different opportunities were happening. We were booked at WrestleCon, so I got to go down and do WrestleCon with commentary with Jay Enterprise. Things were happening. Things were going my way. And then all of a sudden, it was kind of weird. It was just a random thing where we were doing a pre-show. I believe it was March. No, April. I don't remember. I think it might have been April of... might have been March. I don't fucking know. Of 2017, where the pre-show was going to happen. David Adams was nowhere to be found. And nobody knew where he was. I think he was in the bathroom. Whatever the case may be, we needed to start. So Pat goes, hey, Dave, you want to just go, you know, ring announce for the pre-match, pre-show match? I said, yeah, whatever. How hard could it be? So I go outside. I go down the ramp. I grab the mic. And I have, like, the first match introduction. And I do it. And I'm like, well, that felt really good. And I was like, shit, I think I did okay. Like, all right, whatever. That was great. Next thing you know, all this drama, which I won't get into. You can go to the archives with David Adams. But David Adams is on the outs. And now what? There's a ring announcer position open for WrestlePro. And I'm like, oh, whoa, here we go. And like, opportunity just knocked. Here's me going to kick the fucking door down. And I did. And the rest is history. Right now, as you see, 2018, you know, I'm the ring announcer and commentator for WrestlePro. And it all started with fucking going to a PWS show in 2012 and saying that I was going to do the dream for me and John. And you know, it's crazy when we think about it. Look at the doors that pro wrestling has opened up. It opened up the door to get to Sirius because my interview was pretty much a wrestling interview. Okay. And then, you know, I became a writer for a magazine for a little while. And that was because they did a cover story on PWS. So I became a writer there, established, published, awesome. And then all of a sudden the podcast thing started because I was injured in wrestling. And then this podcast started a year ago, pretty much today, if I'm not mistaken. A year ago today, I started this podcast, Destruction 101, because why not? Because I want content and I want bigger things for myself. And the only way to do it is just keep talking until they can't stand you anymore, because that's exactly the route I'm going in. And look, as funny as that sounds, you know, the opportunities that have come up last year alone are, it's just something to be said for, you know, Pat Buck and Kevin and those guys giving me that second chance that I needed. You know, and Mike Bucci had a running joke, Nova, saying, you know, Dave Destruction has been kicked out of here 5-6 times and he's still hanging around. You know what I mean? Like, wrestling is a business where you're going to need a thick skin. You're going to need to make your mistakes. You're going to need to fuck up royally and get kicked out and fired and all this other shit to succeed. And like, it sounds stupid, but I couldn't thank my mistakes more to lead me to everything that happened and everything that's going to happen going forward. I mean, last year, you know, and if it wasn't for my close relationship and friendship with a guy like a Curt Hawkins and Raleigh and Jay Silva that we bullshit all the time, when this Nets thing came about and somebody sends me a link saying, hey, man, you know, you might want to look into this. And I was like, eh, all right, you know, whatever. And like, Curt Hawkins was the one who was like, why wouldn't you? Like, what is, don't you want to succeed? You know, like, no, yes. And I'm like, yeah, I do. And then I went and I killed it and I did it. And that was it. The decision was made where they didn't choose me, but then I put my audition tape out there. Bam, you know, BMG, Silver Modeling, and, you know, Michael Lyons, and then, you know, hears my voice and says, fuck, this guy needs to be a voiceover talent. Boom, I'm a voiceover talent. I'm going to be working going forward. And then my one of my friends, CJ, who worked my wedding, who's into the wedding industry and entertainment industry, saw that I can put on a show, I can talk in front of a crowd, I have a decent voice, bang, I'm working for CWE in 2018. So all this stuff, it's crazy how everything can come full circle and you can go through all the trials and tribulations and really feel like you're at wit's end with a lot of things, but then everything comes full circle with a little bit of positivity, a little bit of hard work, and just overall just really putting your, you know, pedal to the metal and just accepting defeat. You know, I accepted defeat. I accepted the fact that I was kicked out of WrestlePro or PWS at the time. I was accepted that I wasn't going to be a mainstay over at Sirius NFL Radio. I was. These are things that I had to go through and had to understand of what exactly, you know, where I had to go and who I had to become to do all this stuff. And, you know, going forward, there is a lot more opportunity. And I will be flooding everybody with a whole bunch of media and stuff like that. Tonight, I'm designing my wife, who's an incredible graphic artist and stuff like that. She's an interior designer. She's fucking awesome at everything. So she's going to help me design what she helped me design my Destruction 101 podcast logo. She's going to help me design something where I'm going to entitle it, I believe, A Daily Dose of Dave, which is going to be a nightly or a daily vlog where it's going to be video content. And this is all stuff I'm learning from Gary Vaynerchuk, which, again, at the Wawa's, you know, Matt McIntosh and Bobby Wayward make a joke that I've been quoting him a little too much or whatever, and I'm like on his dick like 24/7. But it's something that I've latched onto, and unfortunately, I should have did it a couple years ago when my wife actually told me. She was like, "You got to listen to this guy," and I'm just like, "Yeah, of course I will," and I totally didn't. I ignored the shit out of it, so that's my own fault. But there's so much more to happen for me. It all starts with a dream, and it all starts with just the outlook that you're going to make it eventually. You're going to have to eat shit for a little while. You're going to have to go through all this pain and just trials and tribulations. And as I said that twice already, but you're just going to have to go through all this shit to succeed. And with that being said, I'm going to take a break now because I've been going for probably an hour or so. And I'll answer your questions. We'll send it home after that. And then, and then we'll just kick off 2018 that way. So be right back. little switch engage for you. My Last Serenade, one of my favorite songs. Funny, I know I'm not going to go back on the podcast before what I just did, but Kill Switch Engage, The End of Heartache was John's favorite song. So that's why that's my song. It's a remembrance and dedication to him. So what are we doing? We're plugging real quick. Impact Wrestling. If you are an Impact Wrestling fan, tomorrow night on Pop TV, 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, tune in because there could be a special ring announcer. I have no idea. I'm still nervous about it. It's pro wrestling, folks. You know, I was told one thing by Jeremy Borash, and who knows? You know, they can edit that out very fast. So I'm just kind of crossing my fingers and hoping for a little bit of exposure. But we're going to go into, you know, obviously the playoffs start for the NFL this week. I might do a separate little vlog on the playoffs for this week for one of my first daily things that I want to do. The fantasy winnings, which I just received from Kurt Hawkins. Brian Myers finally sent me my winnings. And with those winnings, I turned it into joining up with him as in a playoff fantasy thing where we did it last year. It was fucking awesome. A lot of money at stake where you basically, the rules are you pick one player per team and that's your lineup. It's going to, or you're going to have one quarterback, two quarterbacks, three running backs, four receivers, a tight end, a kicker, and a defense. And I'm not going to release my team here in case Raleigh decides to listen. I don't want him to know my team with Brian, so fuck that. A couple shows coming up. I'll obviously get to all of them. There's one Create a Pro New York show featuring Christian in later in January, so we'll promote that as it gets closer. One thing I wanted to get to before my questions is a topic that kind of obviously is very on the forefront right now with wrestling, okay? And it's one of those things where I don't think I'm not a big fan of women's wrestling that is on the rise, like it's being quoted as on the rise. And I think, and this is not to try to like gain points or anything like that with anybody else, but I think women's wrestling is just as important towards the product than anything else. Like, am I a fan of women's wrestling as a whole? Like, I have a couple friends that are doing big things, you know, Corinne and, you know, Kristen Statlander and like girls like that are doing great things in pro wrestling. And I think that there should be more. Something I've been seeing, like obviously the women's thing, the women's Royal Rumble, huge, but I'm like, why didn't this happen sooner? You know what I mean? Like, it's just different. I know it's kind of weird and off the cuff, but like I see some certain people, Jordan Grace out there and Mia Yim and the real successful stories of women wrestling. And I think that they should have gotten this recognition a long time ago, that they shouldn't have to put in the time that they had to put in to get where they're at right now, because it should be featured. Which is why, you know, WrestlePro is having a women's wrestling match main event in February, between Emma and, Angelina Love. So it's something that, yes, we're making kind of history on our own, but I feel like it should have been a thing a long time ago. I don't know. Whatever. But anyway, I'll go to your questions now. We'll wrap this up. It's been a very, very long episode. Ray Raimundo. That's Ray Sanchez. Happy New Year, brother. First question of the year. 2017 was a big year for wrestling with stars coming all around. Who is your star to look out for in 2018? I'm not sure if you mean independent. I'm not sure if you mean like in WWE, but I'm going to go with independent wrestling because that's what I know best. Well, I kind of know everything, you know, I know what there is to know in 2018, but if I had to pick a couple superstars that are going to be just off the chains amazing this year, I think look out for the very obvious Anthony Bowens, Matt McIntosh. Those are your obvious. Chris Payne has a big match coming up in February. Expect big things from him. Expect like really big things from Nikos Rikos. If you don't know him or you're not familiar with his work, I suggest you get, you know, acclimated with his work. He's done fantastic things. Just overall, it's a good time to be a pro wrestler right now and excel and get the right training and just do big things. You know what I mean? I really believe in everybody. I'm rooting for everybody's success, and I think it's going to be a fantastic year for a lot of people. Mike Malera, advice for someone considering starting a podcast. I've been unable to find a comic book podcast that appealed to me, so I was thinking about doing one on my own. Do it. There's no reason why you shouldn't. Don't worry about your voice or how you sound or whatever. There is a niche and a field for everybody. If you think that you've searched high and low and you haven't found a good comic book podcast, do it. Because that means you can take the fucking market by storm. Much like, do you ever hear of a wrestling figures podcast? Well, I think that Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins might do one. Who knows? You know what I mean? Like, these are little niches in entertainment and wrestling that might not be discovered yet. So if I was you, if you have a MacBook, get yourself a microphone, get yourself some headphones, go on to GarageBand like I did, get yourself a little intro, and bang, off to the races, start promoting the shit out of it. Use your writing website, the Critical Blast website, use that as the platform, put your podcast up there. The more content, the better, and I can get into that so much more as far as like what kind of content and when to put it out there, because let me tell you something, it's something that I'm really, really trying to excel in this year, and that's grow my social media. You can do that because you already have a good platform. Franklin Myers, if you were to book one WrestlePro main event, who would it book to face one another? So one-on-one main event for WrestlePro. Sounds crazy. Sounds kind of just like, you know, maybe doesn't sound like the greatest. I don't know. This is a good match on paper. It's a great match on paper. In four corners, I would have Mario Bacara, Dan Moff, Pat Buck, Kevin Matthews. They're considered the four of the cornerstones. I get it, because then you have Anthony Bones, you have, you know, Falaba and the Carinos and those guys. But those four guys are the trainers. Have all four of the WrestlePro trainers fight in a fatal four-way match. So yeah, if you'd considered it one-on-one, I'm sorry, that's a fatal four. Jeremy Thompson, who do you want to win the Royal Rumble? John Cena. I don't fucking know. I don't really care. It doesn't matter. Curt Hawkins. I want Curt Hawkins to win the fucking Royal Rumble. All right, so with that being said, this first episode has been a very long one. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you allowed me to reintroduce myself to the world and give my story. Because I think it's necessary. I'll do it in 2019, all right? I'll keep telling the new listeners who I am, how I got to where I'm at. It's a decent listen. I'm going to listen to it back because I like to hear a story of success, and I like to see everybody else around me succeeding. There's a lot of cool shit going on in 2018. It's the, you know, not to quote Gary Vee too much, but he said this year could be the best year to be alive as a human being. Because think about it. Everything's at your disposal right now. The internet is a fucking amazing tool, all right? There's just so much shit you can do on the internet alone, okay? There are cars that are just fucking parking themselves. There is just easier access to everything. You know, you go back 25 years, even 15 years, none of this shit existed. You know what I mean? Like, smartphones are becoming televisions now. Like, literally, I have a new iPhone 8 Plus because I decided to break my other phone because of the Cowboys. I digress. Whatchamacallit? Like, this thing could be my mini television. You know, that's fucking nuts if you think about it. You know, it's just a lot. There's a lot of cool shit happening. It's a great time to be alive. It is really, it sounds cliche, but it really is. You can follow me on all my social medias, please. And it's facebook.com/DaveSturcio, okay? Sturchio. Twitter, Instagram, both, at Dave Sturcio. DaveSturcio. Follow me there. Snapchat has been a little bit, whatever. If you followed me on New Year's Eve, holy shit. But that's Dave Destruction 2. I can't change that. Thank you, Snapchat, for not allowing anybody to change it. Now I get why people come up with new fucking Snapchats all the time. Like, this is my new Snapchat. Follow me. Like, why are you creating so many new Snapchats? Oh, because Snapchat's not giving you the opportunity to change your username. Yeah, that's a thing. Go CWE.com if you're looking to book a wedding in 2018. I will be your guy. You can book me David.Sturcio@Yahoo.com or Dave S@CWE.com for either, obviously, your pro wrestling ring announcing, your commentary, or your overall entertainment with Charles Westcott Entertainment. And that's pretty much it. But thank you guys for listening so much. It's a long one. I get it. Thank you so much for being patient. I promise you more topics and stuff and little reviews here and there about the playoffs that will pretty much be going into the divisional round next time we talk. Until then, have a good night. Happy New Year once again, and I'll talk to you all very soon.